Did you hear the news? Stony Brook University's second annual Giving Day is happening on October 8th. 24 hours to give what you can to help keep our students, our research, our medical mission, and more strong as ever. There's never been a more important time to come together. On October 8th, show your Stony Brook pride, show your spirit, show you care. Visit givingday.stonybrook.edu for more information.
And it's 5:59 p.m. on a Tuesday. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. And we're going to take that extra minute and add it into Off the Wall, which is coming up next. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Who?
You, Kyle.
Who?
Over there. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
No, I hear you fine. I see you as well.
Loud and clear. Yeah, it's me. Yeah, Emmanuel.
Yeah. Careful. We've got a barricade between us, a plexiglass barricade.
That's you?
It's me. If you wouldn't fog up the window, you'd be able to see me a lot clearer.
Okay.
Just keep the voice down a little bit, and everything.
Am I shouting?
You are shouting.
Oh, sorry.
And it fogs up the entire room.
And spreads water droplets.
No, actually, we're not self isolating. I mean, we are isolating, but not isolating against each other. Not yet.
Well, mentally maybe, not physically.
Oh my God, what a week! I don't even know where to begin. Where do we begin?
What do you?
Well, Amy did a pretty good job summing up the craziness of the last day, but you know, we haven't been on for a week because we're a weekly show. At least that makes sense. But I thought we were just going to talk about the debate, you know, that was a week ago tonight, and boy, that was something. That
fiery debate.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even a debate. It was, there are so many words I could use to describe it that I can't use on the radio. Dana Bash said it best on CNN. Go reference her description of it. That is what it was. Trump just constantly interrupting. You know, you kind of expected that. And I'm torn. Do you let the guy constantly interrupt or do you shut him up? Yeah, we all want to shut him up. But if you shut him up, you don't hear how big an idiot he actually is. So I was kind of thinking maybe we should have a compromise where, you know, you pipe him into one channel and you have Biden in the other channel, and maybe you have the moderator, if there is a moderator, coming through both channels, you know, kind of like mixing a Beatles tune. And if you don't want to hear so much of Trump, you fade down that channel and you listen to George. I'm having a Biden moment. Biden. Yeah, that's it. So you listen that way, and it's kind of like user defined.
I don't know. I just feel like that's too accommodating. Why don't they just actually have a conversation with one another?
Oh, Kyle. Oh, you're funny.
And obey the moderator. I mean, that was part of it.
Stop,
too.
You're killing me. It's too early in the show to make me laugh this hard. Oh, you look who you're dealing with here. You're dealing with the biggest baby in the world who has to have it his way or no way.
And what way is that?
His way. I don't know. Nobody knows what that means, but it just means he gets to talk all the time. He gets to make all the rules. Nobody gets to do anything else. But, you know, we were going to talk about the debate, but then everything else happened. And, you know, it's not something that you really could say surprised anybody. But, yeah, with all the stupidity and lack of taking care of himself and those around him, Trump caught COVID-19. I feel like I'm announcing something dramatic, but everybody knows it now. Last Friday, that's when we found out that, there was a whole big infectious circle with the White House team as they were traveling and helicopters and in small rooms and things like that. And, you know, right now, at this moment, there are more people infected in the White House than in Taiwan, than in New Zealand, than in Australia. I dare say than in China as well. I'm talking about new cases in the last 24 hours. There are more new cases in the White House than in China. That one seems really bizarre to me. Maybe our writers got that wrong, but I think it might be true. It's definitely true for New Zealand. It's definitely true for Australia. It's definitely true for Taiwan. So, I don't know. Do your own research. I think it's true. But there are so many because it's out of control. I mean, Kellyanne Conway. I don't know why I picked her. Well, I picked her. Have you been following her daughter's TikTok posts? She is awesome. Claudia Conway does not care. She is just expressing herself like a teenager should and basically giving out more factual information than her mom ever could. And in fact, there are some videos. Just look it up. It's being reposted everywhere. There's videos of her mother confronting her on this and using some pretty foul language, too. It's a typical mother-daughter type thing, but it's Kellyanne Conway. And it's not funny because she has COVID-19. I believe her daughter does now, too, as a result. It's It could be very serious. Hopefully it's not. I don't wish this on anybody. I really don't. Even Trump. But, you know, right now, I wish I could stop the story where I just said he caught COVID-19 and was airlifted to the hospital. But no, as we all know, the story continues beyond that, where basically instead of actually learning something from this and maybe being a bit more enlightened, kind of like Boris Johnson, but, you know, maybe a little more even because the stakes are so much higher here. No, he goes out on a joyride with his Secret Service staff in a sealed car that is more sealed than any car can be, infecting them, no doubt, just so he can wave at the zealots that are outside his hospital, waving their flags and chanting and basically just whatever. I'm not even going to get into that.
Why are we even talking? It's crazy.
Why are we talking about this?
No,
this
I keep having to like quell that. The urge to say that because it is what is happening.
Well, you just said it, so it's. Yeah. I mean, sorry. You can't avoid this. This is something that is affecting every single one of us. It's rising to a crescendo even more. But yeah, okay. So he went out there.
There's just so many other things to be, you know, focusing on.
Yeah, I know. Autumn is coming. The World Series. Oh wait, is that working this year? Somehow there's an NHL championship, an NBA championship, and a World Series all going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's football too, but the teams are slowly going out of commission because they keep catching the disease. So there he is out in his special car, infecting the people that are sworn to take a bullet for him. Not from him, for him. Maybe he misunderstood that.
Let's be real. It was a motorcade. That's like 15 cars.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think he was huffing and puffing on everybody in every car. Just basically, I don't know. Who knows what goes on in there?
I'm just saying it's not an insignificant amount of vehicles riding just for one person to wave to a bunch of people that he's ostensibly trying to get away from because he may have been infected by his rallies or some of these places where there were so many people without any kind of protection. And, of course, him not using it. But.
Well, his staff are pissed. They are.
Really?
Of course they are.
Why?
Because they've been infected for no good reason. Oh, you're being sarcastic. Okay, great.
No, I'm sorry.
These times don't need sarcasm, Kyle. We're well beyond that.
It's reflective. No, you're right. You're right. So, I should be more mature than that.
After that, you would think that he might just start following doctor's orders, but he doesn't really have doctors. He has PR guys that come out and say all kinds of nonsense that all you have to do is look at it, look at the facts and realize, hey, this doesn't make sense. You're giving him this kind of drug and then saying it's okay for him to leave the hospital when this is the kind of drug that's given to somebody who is really having a serious case and it's going to make them delusional. It's going to make them feel better than they actually are. The worst thing you can do is let somebody like that loose. And just a number of questions that people in the media and other doctors were asking. And these quote-unquote doctors of his simply wouldn't answer, wouldn't give the information out. And it was really disgusting to see because it was an insult to everybody. And then yesterday, Monday, they let him go back. They let him go back to the White House. That alone was insane. But what he did when he got back, immediately took off his mask and then did a series of photo shoots or propaganda videos. You could tell, looking at him, that he was having trouble breathing. You could see that. And yet he insisted on moving forward with this, and people just let him do whatever he wanted. And then today, he's basically railing on Twitter. That's how you know he's back. He's back on Twitter, saying how COVID-19 is nothing to be afraid of.
See, that I think is the worst. Absolutely the worst part of this because from all accounts, he nearly dropped dead from this, possibly twice, given his, we don't know, but his oxygen levels or him needing oxygen. And to now downplay it after getting so many different therapies, probably like dosed and done really well for his scenario, but he's treating that what is normally an inpatient procedure, like an outpatient, like plastic surgery or some like Botox or something.
It's
just
it's not really superficial.
And to say nothing of the risk he's putting everyone else at, but to have nearly died from it, because I'm assuming that if there was no intervention, if like whatever, Mark Meadows didn't come in there and give him CPR or whatever.
All right, you might be exaggerating a bit, and that doesn't really do us any good. Because
okay,
I don't think he dropped dead, but I think it was very serious. And if he didn't get attention, yes, something like that would have happened.
Okay, nobody did anything. You tell me what the outcome would have been.
If he had gotten the same kind of health care that the rest of us get, yes, he probably would have dropped dead. How about that? That's an accurate statement.
Right, but, and so how disgusting, given that, no matter how little information we get, we can assume it was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
To downplay it now, it just is abhorrent.
Because,
like,
okay, here it is, Kyle. He is being told various things that are untrue. I mean, he lies every day, but he's also being given more lies to help feed his lies. So he's being told, yes, sir, you conquered the disease. You're stronger. You know, all this Kim Jong-un crap that he's being told and believing and reprocessing and feeding to us. And we're not having it.
Eugenics, no doubt.
Yeah, and that is what he's doing now. He's saying that he beat the disease. He hasn't beaten the disease. He's still on drugs. In fact, they say the seven-day mark is when a lot of people crash and their symptoms get worse. I hope that doesn't happen, but it still is a very good possibility, especially when you're just surviving on these drugs they gave you. You don't just get COVID and recover immediately if you had to go to the hospital. It requires not doing the things that he is doing. certainly wearing a mask, certainly not infecting other people, and not being given this kind of immense responsibility that he's incapable of handling even when he's 100%. So you have the situation now where he's even more unhinged, and the evidence is coming out by the hour. He broke off all talks with the Democrats on the COVID-19 stimulus that is essential, saying, I'm not even going to talk to them until after Election Day, basically holding the country hostage. And that is what he is doing, because if he doesn't win on Election Day, well, then he's just not going to do anything until mid-January. We're all screwed then. You see, so we're all being punished. That is what is happening right now. And he's doing more and more unhinged things, telling people that it's no worse than the flu. 211,000 people have died in this country. And while you can't pin every single one of those people on him, you can pin the majority of them on him, because he certainly had enough time to do something to stop a deadly virus from getting worse. He did not. He ignored it. And now he is under the delusion that he somehow has beaten this disease, and that anyone who doesn't beat this disease just isn't trying hard enough.
Yeah, well, anybody with half, you know, would have to realize that to him, he is the world. There is no one else. That's who he is.
So anyway, that is where we are now. He's back at the White House acting crazy. Well, I don't think people are falling for it this time. For instance, he posted very misleading things on both Facebook and Twitter. Facebook deleted it. About time they deleted it. Twitter hid it. So you saw a notice saying this goes against our policy about posting fake information about COVID-19.
What did he post?
But you could basically what I was saying about how it's no worse than the flu and various other. I don't want to repeat what he says because it's wrong.
Yeah, I
it's
think
dangerous
a lot of,
to tell people
a
these
lot of
things.
The news organizations were blacking that out or not re-airing it because it was so misleading.
Twitter said spreading misleading, potentially harmful information, and users have to click past the alert to read the tweet. And Facebook, they said we remove incorrect information about the severity of COVID-19 and have now removed this post. Honestly, folks, if any one of you out there were to go out and delete his account, I think it would be known as a patriotic act in history. Maybe not right away, but if I had the ability to do it, I would. I would shut him up on these platforms because he is hurting people. He is responsible for deaths. This kind of thing should not be tolerated. And there is nothing anywhere that says he has the right to a Twitter account. Okay, that's not in the Constitution. So any hacker out there or any, Russia, if you're listening, Anybody who has the ability to just shut them up on Twitter, because that is directly leading to people dying. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. I feel like I am, but I'm not, because people read this. Look at the. I don't want to say idiots, because it's wrong. They are misled people. They really are. Any other situation, I would probably get along with them. But when I see them following him blindly into the abyss, I have no choice but to say you're being idiotic. That doesn't mean you're necessarily an idiot,
yeah,
but you're acting like an idiot. Yeah, that's it.
You have the potential to be other than idiotic, but right now you're choosing idiocy over all of the other possibilities.
Yeah, yeah, you're going the idiot route. So, you know, all those people out there, they are putting themselves at risk. And while most of them would survive an encounter with COVID-19, there are a good number who won't. And 211,000 people fall into that category in this country alone, more than a million worldwide. That's not the flu. That's not insignificant. And the reason why things are still shut down, don't blame your local officials. Don't blame the governor. It's because we don't have a plan nationwide. You have to shut things down if they're going to be spreading events. It sucks. You know, theaters, gyms, all these places. But
we're losing so many of all of those types of businesses,
but what
too.
I don't get is why we don't have a plan where we simply suspend operations and resume operations when this is passed.
We should have had a plan months ago, because all of the businesses we've lost, I mean, it's heartbreaking, but it's not like, oh, there's going to be a lot of it. No, it's happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It's happening now. There's evictions happening. It's okay. It is not some reason not to do something in the future, because these things are not like hypotheticals. They're occurring for a lot of people. Joblessness, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, you're saying evictions are happening, and that just bugs me, because it seems like all these places are going out of business. The number one reason why they're going out of business is because they were unable to reach a deal with their landlord. So that, to me, says that is the problem. It's not that their business has slowed to a trickle. It's that they can't pay the rent and the landlord doesn't want to hear it. All right, that is what we need to address. Let's say you have a business, you have a restaurant, and obviously it's let's say it's a successful place too, all right? A successful place, but now nobody's coming in because nobody wants to catch a disease. Okay, so your business is kind of screwed right now. But you can offer takeaway, so there's that. A little bit, not as much. Maybe you have a tenth the business that you had before. It's terrible, but it's not nothing. So you have something. Go ahead.
Oh no, I'm wondering if this is where you're going, but like maybe like
a Mediterranean, if that was what you're gonna ask. Mediterranean themed restaurant is what I was thinking.
Oh, that sounds great.
Isn't that nice?
Well, like a 50% rent relief program where if you can run your business to a certain capacity, the some amalgamation, the fund, whatever wherever we're going.
I'm sorry, whose plan was this? My plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. You
no,
had
it's
a plan?
Not your plan. No,
my plan.
No, you
was
took over
good.
My seat on the council.
No,
here.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You run.
No,
the world.
I yield my time.
You can give your plan after I give my plan. This is why things don't get done.
No. I want to hear your plan. It sounds right. So good.
So, oh, now more sarcasm. Wow. Okay. I see how it's going to go here. Let's get that plexiglass up higher. So. You have this restaurant, Mediterranean themed. You can have wine, but not hard liquor, because come on. And the landlord is pounding at the door wanting all the rent, but you're only getting one-tenth the income. That's not fair. Why does the landlord get 100% of what they're owed, and you, the business person, are only getting one-tenth of the income that you deserve? It's not right. Would you be able to survive, restaurateur, if you only had to pay one-tenth of the rent? That is my question. And if the answer to that is, yeah, I'm not thrilled about it, but yeah, I'd be able to survive, well then, that is what we have to do. We have to make it so that these people running businesses only pay the amount that is equal to the amount of business they are getting in compared to what they are supposed to be getting. Now, landlord's not going to be happy with my little proposal here. He's going to be pretty upset, and rightfully so. I understand. I don't know what it's like to be a landlord, but I imagine it comes with all kinds of expenses and responsibilities and high blood pressure and things like that. Okay, so we should make sure you're okay as well. What is it that you have to pay for when you're a landlord? So you have to pay taxes, you have to pay a mortgage, you have to pay to fix things. All of that should be covered in some kind of a fund. That is basically what our government is for, to help people in times of disaster, because this is one big prolonged time of disaster.
Yeah, maybe like the back taxes that Trump owes, we could like take a portion of that to fund people.
There's that. That would be a lot for but
it's
would,
like $100 million. So like,
yeah,
that could help.
It could help
a bunch of
people. It could help if everybody, every billionaire pitched in. Certainly, if we got back that tax break we gave all the billionaires, that would be something.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
Yeah. You take a tiny bit off the military budget, because honestly, this is affecting our nation's security just as much as anything else. It could be done. It would be painful for everybody, but it would be painful for everybody, not just for those people that find themselves in this position. I honestly don't know enough to be able to say for sure that plan would work. Maybe it's completely naive. But if you run a business and you're in danger, no matter what part of the country you're in, I'd like for you to write to us, otw@2600.com, otw@2600.com. That's the email address for Off the Wall, the radio show you're listening to. And tell us, is that fantasy, or would a plan like that help you, or would it have helped you? Because I'm hearing from people who are going out of business that the problem is they can't pay the rent, and they're forced to pay the rent. And the other thing I don't understand is, let's say you have a theater, or as was the case recently around here, bowling alley, and you have to shut down because of this virus, because people aren't coming by. Well, now there's this empty space that really isn't good for anything other than what it already was being used for, a theater, bowling alley. You know, you can't turn a bowling alley into a supermarket. It doesn't really, not without a lot of renovation. So after, let's say, another 6 months of this happen, well, someone's going to walk in there and say, hey, look, a bowling alley. I'm going to start a bowling alley in this bowling alley. Or I'm going to open a theater in this theater-shaped room. It seems to me like pausing, just suspending operations for a while, makes sense on a variety of levels. So what does the landlord gain from having a place go out of business and then having it sit for 6 months, and then somebody else comes along and just starts the same business again? How is that different than you saying, okay, you hold on, pay the amount that you can afford, and then we resume after this amount of time?
I think it's the same reasons that landlords are willing to sit on empty buildings in the first place, like COVID, regardless of the pandemic. Like, why do we have areas where of urban blight or whatever where there's nothing rented? It's a massive tax write-down or
well,
something, isn't
I,
it?
I actually asked that question a few years ago because I noticed in the East Village there are all kinds of vacant storefronts. And I wonder why, how does this help to have all these vacant places when they could be generating income if only the landlord would maybe charge less? But how it turns out in landlord speak, if you start doing that, then you have to start charging less in all of your properties, and then your basic income average goes down, and it's actually more worth it to them to have vacant storefronts and charge high rents for the ones that are filled than to lower the rent for everybody and have them all filled. It's disgusting, but that is how it works. I don't know if that's
also
that applies here with this particular scenario, but certainly if a landlord owns multiple properties, it does.
Also, if it's a downturn, don't they want to like reassess all their properties and maybe take advantage of the opportunity to evict and then go find new tenants who will pay double and won't be the wiser?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of capitalist, cutthroat attitudes that they're, you know, in it. They're not exactly like a charity organization.
Yeah, this is the time in history where capitalism isn't at its best. Okay, this is not where it shines. So,
but they feel totally like unapologetic about it. Like,
I know.
That is totally normal. It's just business. No offense, but it's true. You know, like, get out. I want to make triple.
This just happened. Okay, so there's a debate tomorrow, a debate between Pence and Kamala Harris, the vice presidential debate, the only one. And the plan is to put a big plexiglass barrier between the two of them.
Oh yeah, I think I saw. Is this? Now let me guess. Somebody feels like it's too much of a barrier.
Well, this just happened, so you might have seen it on the TV that's on in the background. But Mike Pence does not want plexiglass barriers. He's actually objecting to this. We have yet to hear medical evidence what the plexiglass is for.
Wow.
Okay. Plexiglass barriers are typically recommended when social distancing cannot be maintained. Honestly, I don't think they trust the Trump team.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
that's fair at this point.
If you look at what happened during the last debate, you see that the Trump people, the family, the attendees, they weren't wearing masks.
They're reckless.
They don't care. And they're still not. They're still not wearing masks. If you look at those people acting like idiots outside the hospital, where I don't think they're still there. Has anybody told them that he's not there anymore? Are they still out there? Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell them. But when they were out there, they weren't wearing masks. They didn't care. And this is going to get so much worse because Trump is now saying that he conquered the disease, that it's overblown. Do you think people are going to start wearing masks now who believe what he says? It's going to get worse, a lot worse. That's why.
A lot more brazen.
That's why. If you have the ability to shut down those accounts, shut down those accounts because people will be hurt. People will die as a result of this. On that subject, horrible story that I just saw. In Buffalo, New York. I don't know why these things always happen in Buffalo, New York. A 65-year-old man in Buffalo faces charges after an 80-year-old man who had confronted him about not wearing a face mask died following the dispute. Donald Lewinsky, West Seneca, New York, was arrested yesterday and is being arraigned this evening on a charge of criminally negligent homicide after he allegedly shoved Rocco Sapienza to the ground in a bar. You know, what would it take for you to shove an 80-year-old to the ground in a bar? There's that right away. But because you're an idiot and you're not wearing a mask, first of all, being in a bar is not a good idea on a number of levels. And I think we see all of them being displayed here. It appeared that two men began to argue as soon as they crossed paths at the bar, not just over masks. Apparently, the victim didn't like the way the defendant was talking to some of the staff. There was an incident involving a young lady. The victim didn't like the way the defendant spoke to the young lady.
Okay, that
making it sound like they're making it sound like the 80-year-old is starting a fight, but it sounds like he's just confronting a jerk
who was clearly doing a lot of different inconsiderate things in a crowded bar, and then so this issue's raised.
So he killed the guy. He killed an 80-year-old man in a bar. That is the kind of idiotic behavior that we are seeing and that Trump is encouraging. Believe me, if we had a president who said it is your patriotic duty to wear a mask, these kinds of things would be much, much more infrequent. As long as we're in upstate New York, though, I just feel I should mention SUNY Cortland. Another campus of the State University of New York, switching to remote learning after 100 students have tested positive for COVID-19. So Oneonta and Cortland, now both shut down as a result of that. I believe it's only, in Cortland's case, I think it's only for 2 weeks. Stony Brook has been getting really high grades as far as how we're dealing with it, which I'm very proud of.
University of Washington is not doing very well.
Really?
They have, I think, 100 cases or 400 cases from some fraternity events and sorority events.
Wow. Still doing that? I mean, what does it take? Also this, I guess I should have mentioned this earlier. If you're in Florida, you have 28 minutes to get this done. But Florida has extended the deadline for voter registration. And that was after what happened yesterday, where the state's online portal crashed under the weight of heavy traffic hours before the deadline. Registration will be open for an additional 7 hours from noon to 7 p.m. tonight. That's because of a lawsuit that civil rights and voting groups were preparing to file today. So these lawsuits do some good. So if you're in Florida, you have 28 minutes, 27 minutes to register to vote. And I assume you know what the website is, because I don't. I'm not in Florida, but you can figure that out. Please, people, wherever you are, if you have the opportunity to register to vote, register to vote. Kyle, you have your ballot. Your ballot came in.
Yeah.
It's sitting over there on the table. We almost spilled ketchup on it before. I mean, you know, the post office isn't going to be there forever. So.
Oh, I thought it was a placemat.
No,
okay.
No.
Sorry.
If you have, you know, a beverage ring on your ballot,
it's
that's
fine.
That's not going to count.
It just means you're taking it seriously.
Okay, we're going to, you know, I have no say in how you vote, and nobody has any say in how anyone else votes.
Look, I don't want it look, I it's my situation.
It is your situation.
No, please,
yes.
Don't share this. You don't need to be getting people involved. No, it's my, I get to decide who and when and how it goes. So please, stay out of my business.
Well.
Maybe I want to see the vice presidential debate. Okay, there's two people on the ticket.
So you're undecided. You're still undecided.
I didn't say that.
And you can't vote for a vice president.
But it's none of our listeners' business. Frankly, none of yours. And I'll thank you to get to the next subject. Here, I've got a paper. I'm ready. Okay, you want to get personal.
You know, if you keep leaving that thing lying around, maybe one day it won't be there, and then you'll wonder. Yeah.
Maybe it's a trap. You understand felonies? You know how that works? I think you do.
I know a thing or two about them.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, if you have a ballot, please fill it out. If you haven't gotten one yet, get one. Don't let anybody talk you out of it. If you intend to show up on Election Day, show up on Election Day. Don't let anyone intimidate you. And we are hearing all kinds of disturbing reports about how poll watchers will be showing up, Trump poll watchers.
These are unofficial poll watchers.
Yeah, unofficial ones. Don't let that happen. Get your phone out. Record it. Call the cops if you have to. Call the media if you have to.
Vote.org has some good resources, too.
Just because they don't intimidate you doesn't mean they won't intimidate the next person. And we cannot have this. We absolutely cannot have this. Vote.org it has a lot of information. Go there. They'll be able to provide you with
organized. You need. Yeah, it's by state, I think. So you can get really precise information, and it'll point you to other resources that will give you exactly where to go and how to be in touch.
So what do you have over there?
Oh no, I was just wondering if you wanted to talk about this this sports film.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but to do that, we have to fire up the.
No, it's here. It's here. It's right there.
No, it's not. You see it right there, but you have to start it first. You can't just hit the play button. It doesn't work that way.
I don't have the switch.
You need a key, and then you need the switch.
I brought it in. I took the cover off. It's really ready to go.
Hold on. I'm trying. There it is. Okay. Yes, it's once again time for the feature that most people tune into the entire show for. Films of the year that was, where we journey back into time. What else would you journey back into? And review films that have won Academy Awards over the years.
We I would
started
say
in what? I'm doing the intro here.
Oh, I didn't know you were. I thought you were done. That's fine. No, go ahead.
We started in 1929, when I believe the Academy started, but we also saw films in the 1800s, and we don't need to talk about all that. But currently, we are up to I believe 1981. And 1981, we saw two films, one the American film and one the international film. And we're going to briefly talk about each of those.
And before we do, I would just add to answer your rhetorical question that I think it would work to say we're going to journey back into the motion picture archives.
Well, we don't have access to the motion picture archives.
But they don't know that.
No.
You don't have to.
I don't want people to think we're breaking and entering. And
No. It's fine. You know what? Just say
we paid for these films. We did. We went completely legit. And in those cases where the films aren't available, we get creative. But mostly, most have been available.
Yeah. In fact, they've been in very a lot of platforms, a lot of ways. And sometimes you pick one way, and then you go to the other way. And
why do we always have such long themes? Our intro is over 8 minutes long. This. It's a sub-theme, and it's 4 minutes long.
So 1981, we saw Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire, yes.
Yes, it's about Cambridge University and a student who experiences anti-Semitism from the staff, but is a part of the Gilbert and Sullivan Club and gets involved in various school activities. You basically see a lot of antics and orientation type stuff in college that is really typical.
Point of information, Stony Brook does not have a Gilbert and Sullivan Club.
They don't?
I was as shocked as you look right now when I found that out.
Wow.
I don't understand why.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Maybe they're just not old enough. They're not
There's no excuse. Yeah. No, that's no excuse for that. But continue.
Oh no. I just wanted to say that they start out with a friendly race, and you realize this young guy has a real talent for running and track,
you know,
in general.
Yeah, when I first saw The Chariots of Fire was our next film, I was like, a film about running, how fun this is going to be. But I have to say, they made it work. They really made it work. First of all, the thing is, here's the theme for the film. You've probably heard this from Vangelis.
Yes, yes.
Who wrote this piece specifically for the film. That's how inspired he was.
So amazing. Just the audio itself was a whole character.
The first 3 minutes of the film where they're just running on the beach.
Which is hard. Sand is hard to run.
Oh, it is. And they had to shoot this a few times. But basically where they pan from one of the leads to another as they're all running and you see their expressions. There was just something so emotional about that without knowing anything about the plot. Just that intro alone, it says so much. And it's so important in any film to have music that matches the film. It really makes all the difference. We talked about Ordinary People with Pachelbel's Canon. This film, the Chariots of Fire theme from Vangelis, it just makes the film work so much better. Without that, I don't think it would have gotten nearly as much praise as it got. It was a decent film. I learned something about Olympic tryouts for running and things like that.
Right. And I would just add that this isn't your typical film soundtrack. Up until this point, mm-hmm. there was not as much, I think, electronic instrumentation.
Right.
And this is the advent right here of synthesizers and analog crossing over to digital. So for me, I find that... Just talk. I could go on and on about the music.
But think about it. This is an electronic piece, but the time period is the 1920s.
Right.
And that's the other thing. This kind of threw me for a loop because it starts, I think, in the 1950s and then flashes back to 1923. And then they have another flashback within that flashback to 1918, I believe, which, by the way, was when the last pandemic was in full swing. And you kind of get lost a little bit sometimes because...
But don't forget the present day guys, the 80s, well, the older men.
No, I think that was the 50s.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think that was the 50s.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't think that was a present day.
Okay, okay.
Except for the credits. That was present day and the music. But no, they went back to 1918 or 1919, but then they didn't flash back to 1923. They just progressed back until they got to 1923. And then they went beyond 1923 to the Olympics of 1924. So I got a little dizzy after a while.
It's true. And I think this is also one of the first examples of like your cliche sports montage or like a montage of resolution.
Rocky? Remember Rocky?
Okay. There you go. But there's definite like early beginnings to something that is so done, overdone. The kind of like the resolution where, okay, we're going to do this. And yeah, Rocky, I forgot. That is a fantastic
But
example.
Is it cliche if it's the first one to do it?
That's what I was wondering. So maybe it's cliche now because Rocky had done it. I was wondering, though, but that was an element of this that stuck out.
Well, did you like the film?
Did I like the film?
I got to say, I didn't really like the people in the film. They all seemed to be kind of jerks, like, you know, self-centered. And, you know, you had the guy. First of all, I wasn't even aware that one of the people didn't even go to Cambridge because a lot of the action took place at Cambridge University, not Massachusetts in England. And
they try to tell parallel stories.
The other guy was a religious guy in Scotland.
Yes.
I just thought they all went to the same school, but no. And that's part of the flashback thing because when they begin, after running on the beach, they all run into a hotel. And I didn't understand why they were running into a hotel, but that has something to do with the qualifying for the Olympics since it's 1923.
The 1924 Olympics.
Yeah, but it's 1923 when they're running.
Sure.
And it's just, I got kind of lost in that. I wouldn't do well on the team either.
Well,
so.
I think, and also it's sort of interesting how it's done, like when he's competing, there is a specific race day he's supposed to race, and he does not want to race or cannot because of his
religious...
This is
the religious guy.
Exactly.
We don't know the names. Trades. We keep forgetting the names.
I think it's Hugh. But
yeah,
anyway...
Let's call him Hugh.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, he resolves this by trading with an athlete who offers up a day, which is sort of cool in solidarity to allow him to compete in another event because that athlete had already won a medal in this particular sporting event. But there's no shortage of things to overcome along the way. And the interesting thing is the movie ends where it begins in sort of a palindrome kind of way with a shot of them running again on the beach, and that.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Didn't it start with the memorial session in the '50s, or did it go there after they were running on the beach? I forget.
Look, our listeners aren't checking, so
yeah.
Does it matter?
There's a lot of time travel in this film, which I guess makes it science fiction. Okay, so let's go to the international film, which we just saw this last night, actually.
Yeah, Mephisto. I just realized something. Yes, Mephisto is our 1981 International Best Picture winner.
From Hungary.
It's true. And did you know, I just read this, that the languages this film came out in was English, Hungarian, German, and Esperanto.
Oh, how about that?
And I'm pretty sure we saw the German version of it. But
yes.
Esperanto, that would have been an entertaining one to have witnessed.
Yes.
But it's about an actor who is so driven, blindly driven.
A German actor.
That's right.
It's a Hungarian film, but it takes place in Germany.
And he is sort of just constantly seeking affirmation in his profession and with his skill.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the Nazis taking over,
it's 1920s, I believe,
or 1930s. Correct. He was doing all kinds of really avant-garde, fun theater that was easily poking fun at the sort of political upper class and elites and all of that that you would expect in like a vaudevillian sort of way. Well, I don't know if it's vaudeville. It is. What was it called? It was.
It's local theater. You know,
bohemian kind of.
This actor's biggest complaint is that he's a regional actor and he wants to be a national. It's kind of like a train network, but he wants to be a national actor, not just a regional actor.
Well, he seeks fame. He wants to be bigger than just the area, you know, and make a mark, as it were. And so his pursuit of that coincides with World War II and the rise of the Nazi Party. Which,
not really World War II, the rise. Yeah, definitely the rise.
Right, and he flees. He flees at one point, but he returns once the Chancellor, Hitler himself.
They never say Hitler.
Yeah,
they never say Hitler, and they never do the salute.
Right. Well, there are some characters and a lot of imagery. I'm thinking of the guy coaching the Nazi youth.
Nazi youth, but do they say Nazi?
I don't even think they use that. No.
Well, they have swastikas all over the place.
It's all over. Yes, but they're even referencing having decorated because this force is coming in and that itself is unusual to have all this decoration
for
them.
There's one thing though that I think really, really stood out, and that is he's in Berlin, I believe. He's moved to a more prestigious part of Germany, and his wife bursts into his room and says, "Have you seen what happened? Have you seen the results of the election?" And basically, they're stunned that the Nazi Party has won the election. And the implication is that Hitler is now in charge. They keep talking about this guy that everybody laughs at, and now we have to take him seriously. How did this actually happen? In reality, I don't believe Hitler won the election. I think he was appointed later on, but the Nazi Party won the election. It brought back such memories of November 8th, 2016, when everybody was in such disbelief that Trump had won. Not comparing Trump to Nazis, but there are parallels. And
more like comparing the election.
Yeah, the way nobody expected this to happen, the way it was kind of like a joke, and the way that things slowly started to change, and that what was safe before is no longer safe. People you could trust before, you no longer can trust.
So therein is his deserting, and as I said, his wife or girlfriend is terrified. They're fleeing and going out of the country as well. But he's lured back.
Yeah.
And basically his past transgressions in theater, however artistic and critical, are it is his understanding going to be forgiven if he just takes up a post in this national theater and is sort of a tool for the interests of the leadership that wants to control culture and actually kind of despise culture, the one leader that is sort of managing him as in his role. So he's coming back there and he's performing and becoming useful, I guess, in this this new party that has come to power. And he plays the devil, Mephisto, in a Faustian story. He plays that early on before all this goes down. And then through his many works in the National Theater, he ultimately plays this part again. And it's that theory, that theme of repetition, very similar to what I noted about the running on the beach, how that's in the beginning and then the end. So we return to where we began with him playing Mephisto, the devil. And that is where it ends up in, I guess I don't want to give away the entirety.
How many people do you think could go out and see Mephisto from 1981 out of Hungary? If you're about to do that, folks, stop listening now.
I just want to say he continues and to the point of just really alienating him a lot. And
you'd
and
expect he's the hero. You'd think he'd be heroic, and he's not.
Right. He's really very cowardly, and the guy tells him not to be with his mistress. So he was protecting her, kind of hiding her away in this, because it was a mixed race couple.
She's
and
black.
That was,
yeah, she's yep, black. I was surprised
that
was by that.
Unusual. And his eccentricities, he was willing to sacrifice that relationship, which had been there all along. She was his dance, I believe, dance instructor, choreographer, and partner in this. So he really just whittles himself down. And the movie leaves you with yet a bigger stage being promised to him.
Well, basically, they take him out to this, I believe it's a stadium, and in kind of a mocking way, they tell him to go out into the center, and all these lights are shining on him. It's very confusing. You don't know if he's about to get executed or just what. He looks
They're
terrified.
They're playing with him.
They're
yeah.
playing with totally, because as you said, while they want to control art, they despise it at the same time. And in the end, he just has this one plaintive line where he says, "I'm only an actor. What do you want from me?" And I guess we were supposed to feel sympathy at that point. I feel no sympathy for somebody who basically turns in his friends and looks out for himself above everybody else and is blind to the evil that is around him.
But I
do get the sentiment. And I also wonder, this is 1981. Reagan had just come into power as an actor. I wonder if there was sort of a comment there.
That, oh, that's good.
He's only an actor. What do you want from him? Because everybody was talking about how incompetent Reagan was when he first came into office. Nobody says that now, but believe me, that was how it was. And we laughed at him constantly. And I still laugh. I still do.
Well, I just took away that it's sort of his ambition is his consummate tormentor. And
yeah,
that's it. The access he needs, the people he has to accept and put up with, are going to bedevil him, you know. They'll torture and torment him, and it's sort of his that ambition coming back and being painful, and it's energy that, you know, kind of boomerangs in a way. I don't know. There's something about that ending that really kind of left it to interpretation.
It was an interesting film, and I'm glad we saw it. Not entirely satisfying. Didn't really sync well with the characters or the main protagonist, but it was definitely worth seeing. So that ends this edition, Films of the Year That Was. Let's put that away until next week. You know, a lot of Nazi themed films. Say what you will about Nazis, but no sentence has ever started out like that and ended well. There are so many good films that came out of the Nazi era, as there were with Vietnam and World War I, all kinds of horrible things that happened turn into inspirational pieces of art. Well, that's the nature of art.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's done a breakdown or found a story on a breakdown of the ratios and sort of the statistics of it, but I would venture to say I feel like there's at least a good 40% of the Academy Best Pictures in both categories, at least 40% that really rely heavily on those particular historic themes or themes adjacent to them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that it's worth noting.
So we just got these numbers basically back up what I was saying before. Reports of new COVID cases in China, the People's Republic of China, the big one, you know, the
Chinese Communist Party.
Well, that's not what the country's called, but yeah, they run the place.
Apparently that's what they're calling it.
They reported 12 new cases on October 6th, October 5th, 20 new cases, October 4th, 16 new cases. I think the White House is ahead of them. I think the White House has reported more cases in the last couple of days than China has. And you can say China's lying. Okay, great. But you can't prove it. So that is officially what is being reported. But
the chiefs of staff now? I mean, the military,
the joint chiefs.
Yeah, think about that. Yeah.
The people in charge of the military are working from home.
They're going to zoom in like a
I sure hope
defense.
your DSL is paid up because, you know, any kind of insecurity on that level is going to hurt us all.
Sir.
This is not good. This is really, really, really bad. And I think we'll be finding out about that in years to come when the other books come out and films and things are made of this era.
Yeah, there's a lot. I feel like we're getting just a fraction of really how things are going down. But thankfully, there are brave reporters willing to cover the latest antics in this wild, wild political era.
Yeah, I am amazed by the people who are going out there and basically reporting the facts.
Professionals.
Yeah. And imagine where we would be without journalism, without these, you know, they get it wrong many times, but when they get it right, it matters, it counts. And in this particular case, reporting on the lies, the inconsistencies, the omissions, that is what we need. If we didn't have that, if it was just, you know, state-sponsored media just parroting whatever the leaders are saying, we would have a completely different perception of what was going on. That's why the media is the enemy, according to them. And what are we seeing now on TV? Stephen Miller tested positive for COVID.
Yeah,
okay.
Breaking news.
I swore I would never celebrate when somebody tests positive for COVID. And I'm not going to celebrate knowing that Stephen Miller has just tested positive for COVID. But I am not going to wish him well.
Okay.
Is that too much?
No, that's...
I do not wish him well.
That's saying something. Yeah.
But I will not be opening the champagne.
That'll be something, yeah.
Well, I will be opening the champagne, but it's unrelated because I have champagne and I want to open it and...
Should we chill?
Why
that?
Should I not I do that? That? Just because Stephen Miller's an idiot that got himself infected. Okay, and I don't want to blame people who get infected because most people are doing the best they can. These idiots, though, I'm sorry, they just laughed in the face of it, and it laughed right back. All right, I'd like to go out on the theme of idiocy, if I may.
It won't be difficult, I don't believe.
Well, no. This is the year of the idiot.
No, it's the year of the rat.
It is, isn't it? Okay, that could work too. Here's a song. You may know this song from Ashley McIsaac from Nova Scotia, but I'm going to play a different version from the original writer, Bob Snyder. That's Snyder with an I. He's also from Nova Scotia, and it's just, I'm playing this version because the lyrics are just much stronger, I think. But the Ashley McIsaac version rocks a lot better too. You should listen to both of them. But it's basically... What an Idiot He Is the name of the song. And I just want to dedicate this to all the people in the Trump administration that fulfill that particular qualification. And Bob Snyder here on Off the Wall. We'll see you next week. OTW@2600.com. Good night.
Bye.
Oh, listen to the last line particularly.
He walked with a swagger. He talked with a sneer. Never think about him till you don't come near. He does. doesn't bother looking to the left or to the right. He knows where he is going and he keeps it in sight. And he can never figure out why he is so uptight. What an idiot he is. He know that is a jungle and he thinks he's Jungle Jim. And no one gonna get away with nothing with him. He hasn't got a principle, he hasn't got a clue. And he hasn't got a doubt about what you gotta do. You gotta get the other guy before he gets you. He's always gotta make a big impression on you. He gotta show you what he has and tell you what he can do. All the while he's gonna try and cut you down to size, try and hide the simple truth with his elaborate lies. One thing he can never do is look you in the eye. What an idiot he is. He hasn't bothered thinking since he was 10. They tell you he already knew what he had to know by then. Anyone who disagrees with him should be in prison. All he wants is what is his, even if it isn't. You can talk until you're blue, but you never make him listen to what an idiot he is. He thinks his only problem is he ain't got more. He won't get so rich he can buy the whole damn store. Well, I guess he knew the value of his hard-earned buck. If you try to bum some money, you will have no luck. But he will spend a couple hundred on a deco for his truck, no problem. He's always got the latest girly magazine. He knows what every dirty word in the dictionary means. He looked him up. He's always got a snicker when the girls go by. He thinks that every one of them is giving him the eye because he dressed so sharp and he's such a cool guy. What an idiot he is. The only thing he cares about is what's it gonna cost. And the only shame he knows is that the home team lost. You see the game, he got an easy boy recliner and a color TV. And a Colt 45 hidden underneath the seat. And he can hardly wait to shoot somebody in the knee. What an idiot he is. He doesn't even know what an idiot he is. He says it was an idiot. Lord have pity. His favorite food is Wonder Bread and cheese whiz. Give me. He's a 1% attention and a 99 show. And he always got an answer even if he doesn't know. And if you tell him where it's at, he will tell you where to go. What an idiot he is. Well, I see him everywhere I go and he gives me a pain. When I'm sitting in the movies, he will rattle cellophane. Always got a dumb expression on his face. He makes me feel sorry for the human race because I got a funny feeling that he's running the place.
Yeah, the great Bob Snyder from I have this album. It's I think it's called The Street Takes You In. And always loved him. Right now, it's time for Finn's Revolution, right here, WUSB, Stony Brook.